did police use excessive force? Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead this hour, why a viral video has some calling for an independent review after a JSO officer made a controversial arrest. You can join the conversation right now. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, local activists rally this week against detention camps on the southern border, all about lights for liberty. That and more just ahead. But first this morning, the Jacksonville branch of the NAACP is demanding an outside review after a video that went viral shows a white JSO officer slamming a black suspect's head into the pavement. This happened during an arrest on July 4th. Dan Scanlon has been covering the story for the Florida Times-Union, and he joins us now for a closer look. Dan, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
It's 549-2937 to give us a call here on the show. Did you see the video? You can look at it on our First Coast Connect Facebook page right now. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and tweets to @MelissaInJax. Our Facebook page open as well. Let's begin with what we know. What does the video seem to show?
Well, the difference here between most of videos like this was not shot by some bystander on a cell phone. This apparently was a Channel 4 camera on a tripod, so it's steady, and it does show the following. The suspect without a shirt, he is Tadarrell Bruchet Britt. He is 130 pounds, 5'5", 47 years old, and he is a registered sexual offender. Apparently caused a serious problem, and we'll get into that later. But he comes out, finally, and hands up, lies down. But as the police start coming at him to get him in handcuffs, if you watch the video, he does reach into his back pocket briefly and then tries to sit up, at which point officers descend upon him. And I counted one officer, 1, 2, 3, 4, bangs his head into the pavement there on Cinderella Road. And then you can see in the same time he's being handcuffed and then is pulled to his feet and walked away. There's about 12 or 13 officers around him. I'd say there's about 3 or 4 officers basically on top of him. And again, this is a police situation. This is a suspect who has threatened to kill himself, kill others during a 2-hour SWAT standoff, and then starts reaching for something. So the police respond with force to secure him. I even had to laugh. The officer who's running up, as he, I guess, reaches for a taser, his taser or something comes off of his holster or off of his belt and falls to the ground about 6 feet away from where Mr. Britt is lying down.
Okay, we reached out to JSO and they told WJCT that the incident is under administrative review and so they cannot comment at this time. The NAACP, however, is commenting. Branch President Isaiah Rumlin has demanded that this officer be suspended without pay. He's called for an independent FDLE investigation alleging excessive force. What about the NAACP's call?
Well, the NAACP, probably Mr. Rumlin himself, did say they met with the sheriff. And the sheriff's comments, apparently, according to the news release that we all got, was that it would be looked into by the appropriate groups and that the sheriff did understand the concerns. Duval County, Jacksonville is a rarity in the state of Florida that when there's an officer-involved incident, our own department investigates. A police-involved shooting, for example, JSO does the investigation. Any other county around us, FDLE is requested to step in and do the investigation. And recently in St. Augustine and St. John's County, when a person was found dead of a gunshot wound who had been privately investigating one of the St. John's County deputies for the death of his girlfriend, we know that story, they called in Putnam County to do the investigation. So other departments bring in semi-independent but government entities. JSO does its own investigation, has its own board, has its own review. So this is going to be quiet until JSO finishes its investigation.
We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Of course, for years now, activists like the NAACP and others have called for a civilian review board to look into controversial interactions between JSO and civilians, particularly African-American suspects or people that have alleged police brutality. Sheriff Mike Williams embraced body cameras recently, and those are being rolled out here in Duval County. Officers will be wearing them to record interactions with the public. There's been a national outcry about this issue and calls for body cameras for police all over the country after a series of flashpoint videos have been released and gone viral, alleging police using excessive force, most often on Black people. And so let's talk about the racial aspects of this. It's a white officer. It's a Black suspect. This is not a new story for Jacksonville, let's be honest.
Correct.
Or the country. And so how then do we as a community grapple with this, both for police and the public?
I don't know how to answer that question. Unfortunately, it has occurred before. Some suspects have died. Some police-involved shootings have certainly brought up some controversy. And the direct quote here from Isaiah Rumlin, head of the NAACP, is it's clearly evident from video footage the suspect was no longer a threat to the numerous officers surrounding him. Therefore, to aggressively slam his head into the pavement multiple times was totally unacceptable and warrants a complete and swift investigation. He also says this is happening all too often and the citizens of Jacksonville are fed up and deserve better treatment from law enforcement. I don't know. I've certainly seen and talked to Mr. Rumlin many times over recent incidents. But remember, there is no public access to any police review until it's over. It used to be that you could sit in and watch. Now you cannot during a police-involved shooting. So they do it. I like the guys there. I like what they do. But we have some issues in the city, and that's one of them, that there is no public review, no independent review of a police-involved incident, and we won't know anything. And kudos in this case to Channel 4, that who had a camera with a good lens and got it. And it wasn't a wiggly cell phone video.
That's
we can
right.
watch it from start to finish.
We have the video courtesy of Channel 4, our news partner. There have been media requests for any body camera video of the incident. Police denied those, correct?
Yes. In fact, the response to a media request on the transparency site, which is what the sheriff's office calls it, is... footage is, quote, exempt at this time pursuant to pending prosecution and is designated as active criminal investigation. We had been told that body camera video would be available. The only body camera video from a police officer, to my knowledge, that has been made available to the public was when the police officer shot the dog as it was running at him and surprised the heck out of him. And I would presume that was to show that this dog was probably going to get something vital on this officer in a bite, and the officer responded correctly.
All right, and let's go to your calls now as we speak with Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union about a recent viral video shot by our news partner, WJXT Channel 4, documenting a controversial arrest over the July 4th holiday here in Jacksonville. Do you think police used excessive force or not? Give us a call. What are your thoughts, comments? 549-2937. Bob is on the south side. Hi, Bob. Good morning. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't notice me. So no question, just more or less just things I've realized through time. My initial statement was going to be that, I've worked with in various jobs quite a few people that have been turned down, could not get to become an officer because they failed their psych eval. And I have noted that all of those people tend to have that, you know, gung-ho, oh, kind of attitude. And it is kind of what you see in these videos. It's a cop that's all, I don't know a better way to describe it, but you know what I mean. They're not handling the situation properly. And in their heads, they are there to be, I am a source of power, I'm over you. I'm not here to help you. And I think that's not just here, but that's in any video you see. So I think that, the problem is systemic. It's not just here. It's everywhere. I don't think enough consideration is put into the psych eval. And we talk about people that go in and shoot up schools and various things like that, and they should get a psych eval for a gun. Well, we're putting a gun in the hands of people that are supposed to protect us. So I think more should be done on that. In Jacksonville, I know a few officers, and I know a few that I would totally have no problem seeing them in that kind of situation. And I know a few that I worry about if they got in that situation, it would not be handled correctly. So, yeah, you can see just on a personal level if you happen to know a few. I'll throw in one thing, which is I have met a couple of times, don't know by any means, John Rutherford back in the day. And, you know, I believe he truly, truly, truly had everything at, in everything's best interest at heart when he was trying to handle something and something that was wrong or an officer issue. He wanted to make it right. The last thing I'll say, and I didn't think about this when I called, but you spoke on the racial aspect of it. I work in a industry where I end up reviewing criminal records of people, and you can go, it's a black male of this age. I don't have to look at the report too much. I know what he's going to be arrested for. It's always the same. It's a white male of this age. Whatever they're trying to get, I do it for jobs. Whatever they're trying to get a job for, I can tell you it's not going to be the same thing as that black male. It's going to be these crimes for this age. And
what's the and what are you saying? Wait a minute. What crime are you saying?
It's a young black male, possession instantly. Young white male, okay, it'll be a possession and it'll be dropped down to they've done a PTI or something like that. Young black male is going to have served time, you know, things of that nature, and it's super common. If you look at, let's say, a driving record with that, because I deal with those as well, young black male. Or, you know, what have you.
What do you do, Bob? Stop. What do you do?
I don't really want to get into that. For my job, I have to review some criminal records at times. I have to, well, a lot of the time, and I have to review, say, driving records, a variety of things.
Okay. All right.
Personal information.
And I appreciate all of those points. Lots of points there from Bob on the South Side. Thanks for that call so much, Bob. And, okay, let's get into a few of those points. The first one being, his perception that some police officers have an authoritarian mindset and are not always, even in his view, psychologically stable enough to be wearing a badge and carrying a gun. Here's another point of view from a listener named Andy. He emails the show. I think the situation would have been stressful for any officer, considering the suspect claimed to have a gun and was threatening to shoot. Self-control would be difficult to maintain under that circumstance. In this particular case, I find it difficult to blame them for reacting as they did. Well, so these issues are complex.
Let's talk about the basic facts off the report here. Let's to give credit, the report is extremely detailed. This guy had multiple warrants. The bottom line was he had failed to register as a sexual offender, plus a number of other similar warrants against him. They tracked him down through a tip. As soon as the officers, three officers, got to the house, someone in the house said, he's going to run out the back. So the cops cleared the house, and lo and behold, he's inside, won't come out. And the report says, very specifically, that he was ordered to come out with his hands up. Mr. Britt immediately advised that he was going to have, that they were going to have to kill him. He repeated numerous times that he would kill police. He said he had a gun, although he did not have a weapon. So for the two-hour SWAT standoff where he was inside the house and yelling back and forth with the cops, he was making threats against the officers and threats about a weapon. So that amps up the situation. Mm-hmm. When he finally comes out of the house, an officer tried to deploy a CEW, I'm guessing a taser, but did not. And then they had to do the takedown that we see on the video.
So, yeah, by the time the takedown occurs, as you said, there's been this whole backstory. The adrenaline is flowing and all of that. You know, JSO, along with other police agencies in recent years, have been encouraged to, and in some cases they have, gotten more serious about training officers in de-escalation techniques. There isn't always a SWAT team involved. De-escalating tense situations can result in a more positive outcome that doesn't lead to this type of scrutiny. Not saying that it would have applied necessarily in this particular instance, but because everyone has a camera now, Dan, and because police are under a lot more scrutiny, they have been changing the way they go about their tactics and how they go into tense and sometimes dangerous situations.
And when we've been at crime scenes, SWAT scenes, you can hear the negotiator on a loudspeaker, on a bullhorn, trying to talk them out, trying to talk them down, bringing family to them, somewhat like you see on TV shows. And then ultimately, the officers will utilize, if it's a really hairy situation, will use this little bulldozer with a big metal shield in front and advance and try to get in the front door. And then they use a stun grenade or they use tear gas to try to take that suspect down without bodily harm. But again, a police officer is trained. If a gun has to be used, it's got to be lethal. Everyone says, why didn't you just wing them? No, we're trained to take out the threat. And it's been shown as late as a year ago when I was out at midnight on the West Side and two officers were shot by a guy who came running out guns blazing after a standoff. So the danger threat is there. It's amped up on both sides. You don't know. John Rutherford was very good at talking about suspects who were amped up on drugs, alcohol, whatever, and would feel no pain. A taser would not affect them. So you never know what's going to come out that door.
John tweets the show, what is most fascinating to me about the advent of video in law enforcement is that at the end of the day, we still find ourselves in another Rashomon-like drama. The truth appears more elusive than ever in these tense times. And of course, he's referring to the classic Akira Kurosawa film Rashomon, when four different people remember a crime four different ways. Mm-hmm. Not everyone saw the same thing. Here are some comments on our Facebook page. Tracy writes, it is excessive force, but as you can see, another officer jumped in and shielded the man. So he should be commended. The headbanger needs to be investigated.
And at the point that the headbanging was occurring, Mr. Britt was already being handcuffed. As far as I can tell, you have to look real carefully because there's people in the way.
Yeah, so
but
the,
it looks
the
like his hands
becomes,
are being handcuffed.
As he's being cuffed, did he need to have his head banged like that?
I do not think so. And along with the fact that at 130 pounds, I could sit on him and probably hold him down. Unless, of course, there was some adrenaline or drug or alcohol factor that was causing Mr. Britt to be so excitable, so energized that it did take more than one person to put him down. But the comment has been made in our newsroom that he was a little guy.
Okay, and so as you continue to follow this story, as you said earlier, the NAACP is calling for an FDLE review. Is there any chance of that happening? An outside review?
To my knowledge, Jacksonville Sheriff's Office would have to request that investigation itself from an outside agency. I do not believe FDLE has the ability to do it themselves. Now, that said, the governor or one of the cabinet members could request, I believe, an investigation, or one of our senators or congressmen could request it, and it would be taken under advisement. But to my knowledge, it has to be a request from the agency involved.
Dan Scanlon of the Times Union, always good to have your insights into reporting on police and other matters. Thanks for being with us.
Sure.
And later in the hour, much more still to come as She Is Fierce takes over the Kummer Museum this month. We've got a preview. But up next, local activists rally against detention camps on the border. A look ahead to this week's Lights for Liberty. That's in a moment. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back. Well, this Friday night, activists will join rallies around the world at Lights for Liberty. It's a nationwide vigil to end human detention camps at the southern border. We're looking at it now as we welcome Toby Gialuca. She's a St. Augustine resident and attorney who works with refugees in Texas and one of the original founders of the Lights for Liberty Coalition. Toby, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you. Also here, Basma Alawi. She's a refugee organizer at the Florida Immigrant Coalition. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. As we look ahead to this Friday's Lights for Liberty vigils, what are your thoughts and questions about the ongoing humanitarian crisis at the southern border of the U.S.? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Toby, let's start with you. You're one of the founders of Lights for Liberty. What is the mission of this group?
Our mission is to, first of all, provide a platform for impacted people and community to tell their story and to help educate the public on the situation that we're facing at the border and with immigration in general. Secondly, we would like to further mobilize the population in an effort to drive change.
And how will these vigils this Friday night do that? We're hearing horrific reports coming from these camps. They've shocked the conscience of the nation. Children in large numbers being separated from their parents, which has never been done en masse before.
Yes.
Kids in being held in terrible conditions, reports of sexual assault. People are upset. They're furious. But how can vigils stop this?
Well, I don't think we can look at it as that vigils are going to stop this, because obviously this is something that has to be addressed at a much higher level. However, I think it's important that those with the ability to make the policy changes necessary realize that that Americans and in fact, individuals worldwide do not condone this kind of behavior and that we will not tolerate it.
Now, you've worked with refugees coming over the border in Texas. What did you see there?
It almost defies articulation because it is so outside of the bounds of our normal experiences. To see people that are held in these conditions and treated in this way is just devastating. And I can't imagine what it's like to actually be one of those individuals. We saw overcrowding. We saw children who were kept in filthy conditions with, you know, they were either being baked outside in the sun or frozen inside in what was called the freezer. They were partially clothed or not clothed at all. They didn't have access to running water, soap, toothbrushes, showers. They were losing weight. Most of them were not fully clothed. It was just, they were all ill, incredibly, incredibly ill. So if you can imagine having a child who has had the flu, I mean, they're crusted with mucus and vomit. And it's just unbelievable.
It's 549-2937 as we talk about Lights for Liberty. Let me ask you as a follow-up. Two things seem to be driving this. One, record numbers of migrants are coming toward the southern border because they're fleeing drug and gang violence in their countries of origin. And two, the Trump administration, as a matter of policy, is now separating parents and children in large numbers. Why is that happening? And why is that continuing? Because that was the court's order to stop to that and a reunification of the families. So why are we not seeing that?
I think we're not seeing that because the Trump administration has learned that they can do what they want and they're not going to be stopped. I mean, the judicial system can issue orders all day long, but if they're not enforced, then they're not worth the paper they're printed on. So that is, I think, one of the major problems there is that they've just not been taken to task for violating these court orders. As far as the record numbers of refugees, the numbers, they ebb and flow depending on the season. And in May, you always see a spike because people are fleeing prior to the summer months because they know that the journey becomes much, much more treacherous. So we will see a decline most likely in the summer, but they are fleeing violence that we can't comprehend. Gangs, police who are essentially functioning as, you know, agents of gangs who are running these countries. And their children are in imminent danger, so they're willing to take the risk. Even though they realize there's a chance that they'll be separated, at least they feel like their children may have a shot at safety.
Basma, you are a refugee. You sought asylum here in the U.S. several years ago and now speak for the Florida Immigrant Coalition. You came to this country as a refugee. What's your perspective on this?
Thank you, Melissa, for having us today. I was at least given a due process to seek asylum in this country. I came with my daughter, who was 1 year, and my husband. And luckily, we were all were able to came in as a family and not being separated. I think it's if United States at least give these families a chance to seek asylum, to because that's what they are trying to do, and not separate these families and put kids in cages.
What's your response to those who've defended the Trump administration's immigration policies by saying sometimes families were separated during the Obama administration as well?
So is this is something we want to really to talk about? Is that something right? Even if it's happening during Obama time, and we know that's happened even before Obama time, is that something we want to continue doing? Are we supposed to, we are now in what century? We are trying now to do what? This is a humanitarian issue, and this need to stop. We are actually called to immediate release of the detainees from detention camps. And we ask to immediately release them now, because this is should not continue. If we are talking about American value, where is the American value from that?
Let's be clear, the families are being separated in larger numbers now as a matter of government policy, as a way to deter more migrants from making the attempt to cross.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yes, yes.
It's being done as a way of, as a matter of deterrence.
Yes, and it's being done on humanitarian. Like as what Toby was mentioning outside here, she was mentioning a story of a teenage pregnant woman who's not being giving medical service for her and her child. There's kids with 4 months old being separated from their families. There's a lot of stories that unbeing covered and unbeing seen. So it's just really sad to hear these things happening. Just in the Homestead, it's the largest children detention camp in the country with a number of 2,700 young people. It's soon gonna be more than the Homestead High School in South Florida.
Thousands of young people, including babies as young as several months old, have been separated from their parents. Toby, at the same time, immigration authorities, ICE, have essentially flouted Congress by opening, we're learning this week, three new for-profit detention centers in the South.
Yes, that's true.
That just occurred.
Yeah, there will be more.
Okay. And so what is the position then of Lights for Liberty? As we mentioned, there will be hundreds of rallies this Friday and even around the world calling for an end to human detention camps at the southern border. We're calling them human detention camps on this program, although some have called them concentration camps.
I would call them a concentration
would you,
camp.
You
yeah,
would
they
call
fit
them
the
concentration
dictionary
camps.
Definition of concentration camp. I mean, it's not a matter of interpretation. They fit the definition of concentration camp.
What's your response to those who've criticized naming these camps concentration camps, saying it cheapens the memory, the legacy of Holocaust survivors in particular?
I disagree. I think it honors their memory, because there's a difference between a concentration camp and an extermination camp. And that's something important to remember. Extermination camps didn't come first. It began with concentration camps and it escalated. I'm not suggesting that we're going to escalate to that type of situation, and I surely hope that that is not a possibility. However, these are in fact concentration camps.
It's 549-2937. What are your thoughts about Lights for Liberty? We'll go to your calls in just a moment. And Basma, you mentioned that your family wasn't separated when you came here as a refugee. Tell your story again. Not everyone knows your story.
Yes. So I was born in and raised in Iraq, lived most of the wars that happened in Iraq, and it most of them were was influenced by the United States policy. And in 2003, after 2003, my I got married in 2007, and my husband was a translator with the American government in Iraq. And because of that, we were threatened, and we needed to escape the country. We came here as a family of three in 2010. We arrived in 2010. We're gonna almost finish 10 years in this country. And when we, before we came, we went through a really long process of vetting and screening, as many people don't know, because they people think that refugees easily come to this country. We go through a really long process. And when we entered the country, we came as refugees. And just to mention that the American government now left behind over 100,000 refugees, just like my husband, who was supporting the American troops in Iraq. So they didn't finish really the job. And that's what happened. What's the United States now doing? Like, they start something and they leave chaos behind. This should be stopping soon.
What would both of you say to those who have taken strong exception to the Trump administration's policies, but at the same time are leery of what they perceive as an open borders policy? What is the solution? What does Lights for Liberty believe to be the solution?
Well, I think that we have some serious underlying issues that we're going to have to deal with. Lights for Liberty is more concerned with the immediacy of the humanitarian crisis at the border. What we would like to see is we would like to see an end to concentration camps, which basically means allowing people to proceed through the asylum process as it's currently designed, to utilize the residential facilities that are sitting empty while these people are kept in processing centers and cages. We would like to see the end of for-profit detainment of children and families in facilities like Homestead, for instance, which are subject to no state licensure.
Right. A federal facility in South Florida and state officials can't get in to inspect the conditions.
Right.
The largest
right.
detention facility for children right. in the country.
Right. And the people who are employed there are not subject to screening or state licensure requirements.
We've received reports of NBC News yesterday reported that children are alleging sexual assault at some of these camps.
In huge numbers, and those are the reported cases. So you have to assume that there are at least twice as many that have been afraid to make those reports.
All right, let's go to a few calls now. As we speak with two of the activists behind the Lights for Liberty vigils that will take place around the world this Friday night, including two in our area, Carolina is on the south side. Carolina, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure. Go ahead.
So my comment today as a pediatrician in town is I'm just devastated by what these children are going through. The trauma can pass on to their DNA for generations. This, in my eyes, is kidnapping. Forget the concentration camps. We are mass kidnapping children. And, it defies logic and Christianity. Anything that's in the Bible, anything that has been taught to us by the New Testament, it just makes me want to cry every day that I see this. I came to this country as an immigrant legally. I don't believe in illegal immigration, but this is not illegal immigration. These are people begging for help because they will be shot. And I have had family members that have been murdered in other countries because of what they're fleeing. So it's my comment. I'll take it over, offline, but I really appreciate what you people are doing. And please let us know how we can help. And I hope that the Christian souls out there that are, or the evangelists with their mega churches are listening to this so that they can really think of how they can put those churches to good use and not just hide behind those walls. We need to come down from the ivory tower, and we need to really put boots on the ground for these children. Thank you.
Carolina, thanks for that call. And more than any other aspect of this situation, Basma. This is what I believe has millions of Americans so saddened and so outraged, knowing that in the government's name, children are being separated from their parents, and a good percentage of those children may never actually be reunited with their parents because of lack of paperwork, no tracking system to track where the parents are, where the children are. When this first became a national scandal a year or so ago, it was revealed that the government had not set up any sort of system to eventually reunite these children with their parents. And they were ordered to start reuniting families. The Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Nielsen, eventually stepped down from the position because of the controversies surrounding this. And so the trauma that children endure when they're forcibly separated from their parents is severe. And, you know, you can disagree or not with how our immigration system currently works, but most good people of faith, I think, can agree that children shouldn't be subjected to ongoing months-long separation from their parents if it isn't necessary.
Yes, actually, just talking about kids, even if they get reunified with their parents, the trauma gonna still exist. We are really now doing like bad things for generations. When I came to this country, I was 24. I lived trauma and still living trauma of being separated from my family over in Iraq, and still living it every single day. Being not having a mom or sister around me is just really hard. What about a kid who still don't know anything and need to be depend on their parents? I just want to say something that I've never been in a detention camp, but I was hearing that children are only allowed 5 minute showers. They allowed to eat for 15 minutes. A guard must accompany them to the bathroom. They are not allowed to hug, touch, or show any affection to each other.
Right, allowed to comfort each other. And older children are sometimes being ordered to take care of younger children. Minor children being told to care for the youngest children. And so, you know, all of these revelations have shocked the conscience of the nation, Toby. And
as they should.
Lights for Liberty, beyond Friday night's vigils, what else do you plan to do about all of this?
Well, that's an interesting question. And since Lights for Liberty is officially 3 weeks old today, we haven't had...
That's pretty new.
Yeah. I mean, this came as a direct result of my visit to the border and my conversations with some amazing women afterwards regarding what we could do to help literally shine a light on what's happening. And our commitment to fighting the fight until it's no longer necessary is strong. So I don't know precisely what actions. We're working on some calls to action to share with people at the vigils on Friday. And it's going to include, you know, further acts by our citizens in this participatory democracy.
There will be a couple of vigils Friday night, one at 8 o'clock at Friendship Fountain in downtown Jacksonville, one at 7 p.m. in St. Augustine at the Castillo de San Marcos. Let me get in one more call, and then we'll go back to Basma. Willie is on the line from Murray Hill. Willie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Ms. Ross, and good morning, ladies. My question, I read they were giving the children psychotropic drugs. And I was wondering, those are powerful drugs, and I was wondering, you know, are they getting any psychological help, which I doubt very seriously. Also, speaking here, listen to the young ladies, a lot of American people don't even feel that these humans are humans. Mm. That's why there's no, you know, outcry about this. You know, it's like, well, there are people running from a country and they should stay in their own country, and not knowing what the United States done did down there to them country. But You know, they just don't even view them as human beings. Have a good day.
Thanks for that, Willie. Basma, let me get you to respond to that. Do you believe racism is driving these policies?
Yes. Actually, this is just to respond to the question too, you asked, Toby, about the call to action. I think the Lights of Liberty event will actually remind people and wake up people on how they could be involved with organizations that exist, like Florida Immigrant Coalition, like World Relief, like Catholic Charities. There's a lot of organization on the ground working, doing the work the whole year, but really not getting enough funding, not getting enough help. I think it's more than donating, is being involved, being part of an organization. And also, I want to say that, yes, racism is driving all these problems. And just in Jacksonville, I just want to announce that, and we didn't plan for it, but I am planning, as a Florida Immigrant Coalition, we will have a open discussion workshop July 23rd at the Unitarian Universalist Church, talking about racism and how it exists in different communities and how we should, as people who live in Florida, fight it within our own communities and work together on solving it.
That's coming up. In the meantime, this Friday night, Lights for Liberty is holding two events. Toby, tell us about them.
Okay, so the location in Jacksonville is the Friendship Fountain, and that event will begin at 8 o'clock. There will be speakers, and followed by the vigil at 9. St. Augustine's event is at the Fort, or the Castillo de San Marco, and that will begin at 7, with speakers as well, with the vigil at 9. those have been organized by some amazing local activists, Robin Dion, Erica. They have worked with so many people to make this happen. And I am just so proud of my hometown representing. I've been a little bit preoccupied with things from a national level, but I'm just mm-hmm. so happy that these are happening. And I think it's going to be a really powerful event. And we're working with BESMA's organization, Florida Immigrant Coalition, for the Homestead event. And that is going to be beautiful. Our focus there will be on youth speakers who have actually been detained in the Homestead facility itself. So people will be hearing firsthand accounts of what it's like inside.
Well, thank you both so much for being with us. Again, it's Lights for Liberty this Friday night at Friendship Fountain and the Castillo de San Marcos as activists join vigils taking place around the country and even the world to protest the camps at the border. Basma Alawi, Florida Immigrant Coalition, and attorney Toby Gialluca of Lights for Liberty Coalition. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
You.
And we'll be right back.
UF Health North on Max Leggett Parkway is the region's newest hospital and outpatient medical center, featuring all private rooms, 12 labor and delivery suites, full imaging, surgical services, and 24-hour emergency care. More at north.ufhealthjax.org.
Comcast Business, providing gig-fueled network solutions that is intended to help businesses perform. More at comcastbusiness.com. Comcast Business, beyond fast.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. President Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines has been cozying up to China despite China's encroachment in the South China Sea. Some experts are worried.
You give them an inch, they're going to go for the whole hand. And now they want us completely out of the South China Sea.
Our series on China's increasing influence in Asia. Next time, here and now.
This afternoon at 1 here on 89.9 WJCT.
The White House has a new press secretary, Stephanie Grisham. She's known for working well with reporters while also hitting back hard in defense of those she's worked for.
I think she likes a challenge. I think she likes the chaos of it. And she's very good at kind of crisis management.
Now she takes on her biggest challenge yet. I'm Ari Shapiro. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Not all friendships are forever. Your 30s can be a time when ties unravel, particularly, but not exclusively, for working women. A new work of fiction deals with the pain of a fractured friendship. Lauren Meachling on her book, How Could She? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, we want you to join Jacksonville's local leaders and women on the rise for a special Cocktails and Connections event presented by Baptist Health. I am so pleased to be hosting this special She is Fierce evening at the Kummer Museum later this month. Our featured speaker is Lakeisha Burton, Assistant Chief of Police and Executive Director of the Police Athletic League. She joins us now. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Also here, She is Fierce founder and CEO, Kelly Youngs.
Hey, so happy to be here.
So good to have you both here. And this is going to be an incredible event. I am thrilled to host this event Wednesday, July 24th at the Kummer Museum as you, Lakeisha, tell your story on stage. And what a story you have to tell. We're just thrilled to have you participating in this. And first off, let's explain that you are the first female director, I believe, of the Jacksonville Police Athletic League.
Yes, I was. About 4 years ago, I was appointed as the first female director.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Actually, and I have to say, just about a week ago, we just hired a new executive director, Mary Bishop, so I'm excited to have her take that role.
And you're an assistant police chief, but there's so much more to your story that people are going to get to learn about.
Yes, yes. And I'm praying that people come out and hear it. I'm really going to be focusing on the power of your voice. So I really believe that using the power of voice is healing and liberating, and I want to speak to that.
Right, because in your childhood, your young adulthood, you had some incredible challenges.
I did. And I don't want to give away too much, but yeah, definitely. And I'll share that. And I want to just say this, too. I was thinking about this on the way. When you think about She's Fierce, people would think that you're not fearful. And I thought that's not true, because every time I've been telling my story for years, and every time I'm fearful about it. But I think She's Fierce means that you face your fears. So
that's right. Exactly.
So I'm excited
right.
to do that.
And Kelly, that's why you work so hard to showcase stories like Lakeisha's so that other women who have fears and challenges can get inspired.
Absolutely. And I'm so honored to hear Lakeisha say that, because I think, you know, many of the women who've attended our events know that we try to feature women from all different walks of life, all different kinds of careers, who've had all different kinds of challenges and big visions, and really watch them share the truth behind their story. Because many people, just like you just said to Lakeisha, many of us would look at her and say, oh, she's very accomplished, she's doing all these incredible things, and have no idea what she's overcome to get there, and that she might be a little bit nervous about standing on the stage and sharing her story. But for me, that vulnerability is what makes our event so special.
That's right. And this is going to be an incredible night at the gorgeous Kummer Museum of
I'm
Art
so
and Gardens.
Excited.
And the gardens will be all restored in time for the event.
Yes, it's summer at the Kummer. And we are going to have some phenomenal things coming from Baptist Health for her program. They have their women's membership, which they are going to be sharing some amazing things with women in our audience at the event. And, you know, really connected to what Lakeisha is sharing for PAL and for bringing, you know, wellness and just positive and inspiring things to people in this community.
That's right. Lakeisha, you do incredible work with kids, because you're really able to relate to young people, I think, in a special way. And teaching that lesson of wellness to the next generation is part of what you do.
Yes, I think that it's in my blood. I was a product of PAL myself. So I went there at the age of 15. So I really believe in the mission of PAL and all after school programs and program youth programs in our community.
Okay, so with all of that said, I am so excited to say that there are a few tickets left, not many.
Not many, yes.
But there are a few tickets left for She Is Fierce's Cocktails and Connections event featuring Lakeisha Burton of Jack's PAL and the JSO at the beautiful Kummer Museum of Art and Gardens. This is coming up Wednesday, July 24th, 5:30 p.m. at the Kummer. Get your tickets now at Eventbrite or sheisfiercehq.com. And thanks to Baptist Health sponsoring this, along with this program, by the way. And so it's just going to be a great night, Kelly.
We are so excited. I'm so honored to have Lakeisha take our stage and really excited about all of the women that come out to our phenomenal Jacksonville events who make it special.
Mark your calendar for the 24th of July, and I'll see you guys there.
Thank you. Come on out.
All right. That's our show. Thanks so much for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Brady Corum is our director today. And if you have feedback about the show, we always want to hear it. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And if you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8, keep listening for the Electro Lounge. Have a great day and evening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.